The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Ladies and gentlemen, and our younger listeners, and we have lots of those all around the world, actually. Welcome, all of you. Glad you're here. It's time to spend 2 hours with Admiral Harry Cooper to look over the past and the present, but most definitely the past, and understand how we got to where we are, who was involved, and the truth of history. And the more I read about history, and this goes back decades, the more lies I see. I see lies everywhere. History is rarely in accordance with the facts. It's twisted, it's corrupted, it's tainted, it's colored. It's not exactly what happened. It's not even close in many ways. Of course, you know, this whole thing about hate Germany and the evil Nazis. The Nazi term was created by GCHQ in England to disparage the German government and the German people. It's not a term the Germans used, and it has some real negative connotation in German. I forgot what it is now, but it is a word that is, so to speak, it's close, and it means something like a pile of dog poop in the sidewalk, something like that. It's bad. It's a very ugly term. The psychological aspects of World War II are in full blossom now, and you know, you get to the point where you wonder how long they're going to keep this up. It's like the UFO ET cover-up. How long are they going to waste their time on this? But World War II has to continue to be configured to the lie. If they drop any of the big components of it, and I'm not going to name any sections, they'll be in big trouble because the whole thing will start to fall apart. Churchill, pervert, drunk, fraud with at least 5 body doubles and probably the spoken voice on the radio. Look at the French, de Gaulle, the worst human being in recorded history, Joseph Stalin. Zelensky reminds me of Stalin a little bit, throwing all those, he's killed 400,000 of his own citizens, so to speak, of his country. Of course, he's not a member of Ukraine. He's a Zionist, and they have a whole different agenda, a whole different worldview. 400,000, mostly men, some women, slaughtered, and that doesn't count the injured. 400,000 dead. And just in the last 10 days or less, 9 days, since this counteroffensive started, over 4,000 more. No, 7,500 dead, sorry. 7,500 dead and wounded, just in 9 days. These people are gone. They're toast. Anyway, let's go and talk to Admiral Cooper for guidance and hope. Welcome back.
For guidance, is it?
Guidance and hope.
Yeah.
You must lead us from the darkness into the light.
Okay. Now, you mentioned how it has to remain a negative connotation for somebody to be called a Nazi. Remember, the Southern Poverty Law Center posted on their site that I'm a Nazi, which is an absolute lie. But
hey, I got you beat by a number of years. But yes, I'm in the same club.
Right. Oh, they called you a Nazi, too? Okay.
Oh, worse. Worse.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Anyhow, yeah, you're right. The true history of World War II is not going to come out in your high school history books. We bring it out, and, of course, we're paying the price because the spitlickers, as some people call the SPLC, posted that. It cost me an honorary doctorate degree. Mm-hmm. It cost us a lot of money, but mm-hmm. I'm too dumb to quit. So I need somebody to lead me into the light.
I don't know if I should mention this. I tried to employ a professional organization to help me with a transaction. Well, this professional organization said, great, wonderful. I explained the whole situation. Yeah, well, great, we want to do it, no problem. We're going to bring our three top people into this, blah, blah. Well, the next morning, I get a voicemail. Sorry, we won't be able I'll use the term, represent you. We have a conflict. I can't really tell you what it is. Seriously. Well,
yeah,
I found out what it is. And it's simply on my homepage and the big slideshow, which is the second big graphic at the top, I have a couple of, I didn't create them, but they're accurate and they're the truth. I have a couple of pages, images, that show how many of the mainstream media outlets are owned, operated, controlled by Zionists. It's the truth, and I report it the same as if they were Buddhists. I don't care who they are. When a small group has such astounding control over the majority, that's news. So anyhow, they immediately, well, this guy's an anti-Semite. So that cost me another one. And you've paid dearly for it. I've paid dearly for it over the years. I mean, we're not. Look at the people at the top of the disinformation heap and how much money they make in this so-called alt-news world.
And they make more money in a year than I would make in 10 lifetimes.
That's right. And they're all, oh. Anyhow, all right, enough.
Anyhow.
All right, we have been covering the Admiral and I for a long time. And I didn't know about, he knew about this long before I did, because one of the key players in the whole move to South America became a very close personal friend of his, Don Angel Velasquez de Alcazar or something.
Don Angel Alcazar de Velasco.
I was close.
Angel.
Don Angel went down there at the end of the war. He was SS, Spanish-born. And knew the whole story, where they went to live, Adolf Hitler, Eva Braun, his wife, where all the top brass who could get out, Bormann, et cetera, were there, all there. And the home that was built apparently by the Mercedes family on a 1,700-acre ranch called a what? What do they call it?
Inalco.
No. What do they call ranches?
A ranch is an estancia.
Estancia.
This one ain't big enough to be a real estancia. No. A real estancia is many, many, many square miles.
Gotcha. This was a place where it was an estate, hidden, very safe. Very few people lived in the area back in the day, 1945. And Hitler and Eva Braun and all the top brass who got out of Germany and went to South America would come there and have meetings, regular meetings, routine meetings, boardroom meetings. as Bormann and his money tried to propel a Fourth Reich or Reich into the Argentine economy and therefore around the world through extension. And it was a very big deal. So this place, Inalco, is a fabulous piece of history, an astounding piece of history, not unlike the Eagle's Nest. And if the Argentine government had been smart, they would have bought it and restored it.
Yeah.
But they aren't.
Right now, I'm not sure the Argentine government would even have that kind of money. Their inflation is just incredible, 109% inflation. Their peso is dropping like a rock, and it's really sad. It's a beautiful country. Right. I really like Argentina. I love going there on my expeditions like this. Nice people, great food, and awesome scenery. You get that. Well, Buenos Aires is called the Paris of the South, right. And you get down into Patagonia, and especially I think this Rio Negro province is where Inalco's located. I'm not that familiar with their states, but you know, you got the Andes Mountains, you got these beautiful alpine kind of lakes. And when I got off the plane the first time in Bariloche, I almost thought the guy had taken a wrong turn and landed in Munich. It just looks just like it.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful area. And one of the biggest selling beers down there is Warsteiner beer.
Well,
imagine that.
Yeah.
Oh, before we get going too much further, I got to give a shout out to my new writers club. I just joined a writers club here locally a couple days ago, and told everybody to tune in. And so to all the folks from the Citrus County Writers Club, howdy.
Good. I'm glad. That'll be fun. They've got quite a new member. I hope they enjoy all the fun times you'll give them. How often do they meet?
I'm trying to control myself and keep my mouth shut most of the time, which is highly out of character for me.
No, I know. Well, if they spend any time on the site or listening to our past programs, they'll come away with knowledge that they could really acquire nowhere else. You are the greatest living historian, in my view, of World War II and its aftermath.
Oh, Lordy.
Seriously.
Oh, I just got an email here. Somebody said, exposing the Nazi epithet and who started it, why, how, and who benefits.
Oh,
okay,
good.
Let's see what Mary Bailey has to say. Justice for Germans. Oh, that's her, yeah, that's her group. It's kind of lengthy. I'll send it. I'll email it to you after the show.
Oh. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, it's lengthy. And Mary, thank you for sending it in. We'll take care of it. I'll send it over to Jeff.
Very good. Thank you very much for that. I did read the story once long ago. That's why I sounded so dumb. I just can't remember the details. But it's a construct, a very negative.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute.
Public
she copied you, too,
coup.
So you got it, too.
Yeah. All right, good. Well, it'll go in my spam folder, but I'll look for it. All right, this is very good.
I'll send it back to you after the show.
Got it.
I hate spam. I don't even have a spam filter anymore because too much stuff goes into it. I'd rather just sit there and click delete, delete, delete for all the commercials and stuff. I really got to laugh at the ones that come in that tell me how to grow my hair back.
What?
Yeah. Well, those are blanket. They shoot out to everybody. You know, I got more hair on my head than... Yeah.
You could... Yeah. It could become a marketable crop. You could just cut it every so often and sell it.
Well, that's what I tease my barber about that. Ashley is her name. And I wait about every 2 months for a haircut. And she could darn near sell it for pillow stuffing after you sweep the floors.
Yeah. No, it's all that sugar you eat.
Yeah, I got to back off. My blood sugar is halfway passable, but it's not where it should be. It's in the 170 and 180 range, and that's, you know, I don't mind if they have to cut off a foot or so later on, but if it goes after my eyes, I have no reason to live.
Well,
so I got to back off on the sugar.
Yeah, I was communicating with Admiral Cooper a couple of days ago, and he was like, well, I'm going to go get another cupcake now.
I've backed off the cupcakes. I told Kate not to buy cupcakes anymore. And Sean and I, my son, we kid about the ice cream, and I try to sneak it. But I told him a couple of days ago, I said, that's it. The ice cream's all yours. I don't want any more ice cream. So,
well, if you can draw the line now and stabilize your health, you've gotten away with a lot of good times for a lot of good years. So.
Yeah, God built me out of good parts. That's all I can say. I never did drugs at all. Cigarettes in high school, I was one of these tough punks that had the cigarette pack rolled up in my T-shirt sleeve. So I thought, one day I'll try this and see why everybody likes it. I got halfway through the first cigarette and thought, you got to be dumber than a box of rocks to do this. So I never smoked cigarettes, never did drugs. Booze, I didn't drink at all in high school, in the Air Force, in college. It wasn't until I became a professional race car driver. Then I started drinking. Boy, we drank a lot back in them days. And then February, I forget what day in February, 1983, I was falling down drunk for about 2 days, and I stopped. I figured, that's it. I'm done with this. So now if I have 3 or 4 drinks in a whole year, that's it.
When I was a kid, I grew up, they're all gone now, so I guess I can say this, but both my parents were alcoholics. One was a bad drunk, when somebody gets
drunk.
One of my parents, and the other parent was just trying to anesthetize from the pain of life. So it was not a real happy kind of a thing.
Yeah,
I got to the point
sad.
Where I could, if I smelled whiskey or anything hard like that, I immediately shivered and got goosebumps of revulsion all over. It was awful. It wasn't because of the alcoholism. It was just, I don't like it. It's not for me.
Same sort of thing. Yeah, we grow up every so often. Those my granddad, God love him, he was a wonderful, wonderful man, huge, big hulk of an Irishman, but he was an alcoholic. We kept trying to get him to quit. He'd go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and then after the meeting, he'd invite all the people to the local bar for a drink. So they threw him out of AA. I didn't know anybody could get thrown out of AA, but granddad did.
I think there's a gene that predisposes people toward alcohol or whatever alcohol does to you. I think there's a genetic factor involved in some of them. All right, dear friends, we have a lot of pictures to look at.
Yeah.
And for those who have seen these before, welcome aboard for trip number 2 or 3. These are always fun, always fascinating, and all taken at Inalco, which was not just one big Bavarian manor house where Mr. and Mrs. Adolf Hitler lived, but there were 8 or 10 at least other buildings in the back built similarly that were quarters for the cooks, the maids, the accountants, whoever was living there. Then there were guest quarters. Then there was a big barn for horses. Huge barn.
And don't forget the farm that was right adjacent.
The farm, and then the starting gate. They had a racetrack starting gate with 3 slots in it.
Yeah.
A little tiny 3-horse starting gate. So, I mean, they were doing a lot of stuff there.
You hit on an interesting point. Nobody has asked before except just a couple of days ago, our member Robert DeMars, member number 1042, he asked how many people lived there at Inalco.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And, okay, we have the number. I have a file that I haven't been able to vet yet, so I haven't really publicized it. But according to this file, there were about 80 people lived there full-time, not only Hitler and his wife Eva, but also there was some SS, Waffen-SS security there.
Right.
One of them was a member of Shark Hunters. That was Erich Priebke, who had been a Hauptsturmführer, which means a captain in the Waffen-SS. And he was one of Hitler's personal guards there in Bariloche. Well, actually, Vishe Langostura. And then there, as you say, the cooks, the people who took care of the farm, just like in Bavaria on the Obersalzberg, everything from a certain level on up was secure zone, heavy security, and it was the homes of the elite, Hitler, Bormann, Speer, etc. And they grew all their own food right there on the mountain. When we go over there, which we're going over late September for 2 weeks, anybody can go with us. Just send me an email, sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com. Ask for information about the tour to Germany. We're there the last week in September, the first week in October. One of the places we visit was a milk cooling house on the dairy farm, which was run by Bormann. Bormann ran everything.
Yeah.
And the same here at Inalco. That's when they moved there in 1945, that was just about the ends of the earth. There was practically nobody anywhere around, no roads. You had to fly in to Bariloche, which is at the southern end of the lake, and Inalco was way north and a bit east. It was a huge, huge lake. So you had to go there either by seaplane or by, once you get there to Bariloche, you had to take one of the old packet steamboats around. So they had to be self-sufficient.
Isn't Lake Nahuapi kind of like one of the Great Lakes, ours, Superior? I forget which one.
Yeah, by comparison, I guess. It's a huge lake, pretty deep in spots, clean, clear, cold water. We're going out on a boat one time. I just dunked my hand in the water and took a drink. It's pure, beautiful water. And they have their version of the Loch Ness Monster, although they don't call it Nessie. They call it Nahuelito, Little Nahuel.
Do they?
But
it's funny. Old lakes, almost every old inland lake around the world, big, has a lake monster. Myth.
Yeah.
and a lot of them are probably not myths. There probably were some survivors there. Why not? If they were aquatic,
it could have been
reptilian.
Except, according to legend, only the locals can see Nahuelito.
I see.
And I'm not a local, they said. What the heck? Okay, so I'm not a local. I could pretend.
All right, but the house itself, we're going to go to the pictures
itself.
Here.
The
house itself was designed, and I have seen the schematics of it. I can't remember where now, but I've seen them, the actual architectural renderings of the house. To tell our friends who built it, and the time frame in which it was built would have been obviously in probably the early 40s when things began to look like they might not turn out the way that everyone hoped. And the Mercedes family's involvement. What do we know for sure about that?
Yeah, it was built by the Mercedes of Argentina company. It was supposed to be a resort for their executives because it's right on the lake. And this lake is great for fishing. People come from all over the world to fish there. And it's right smack at the foothills of the Andes. So if you like skiing, you're only half an hour away. And to the best of our research, it was finished just a shade before the war ended. And nobody lived there until late 1945. Adolf and Eva escaped, not on board a submarine like them plagiarizers did when they copied my book. And I never said that he went away by submarine. They just assumed they went on U-530, which was absolutely wrong. The skipper of 530 was one of our members. They went on that big plane, that JU-390, flew down to Uruguay. And I was at the very spot where they landed. I talked to the daughter of the owner of the estancia where they landed. So they got as far as Estancia San...
Let me interject this real quick. The name of the pilot of the plane is known,
yeah,
I think. And he lived down there for the rest of his life.
Right. And you got his jacket. Yeah, just before the Kung Flu scamdemic started, the pilot passed away, and his estancia was left abandoned for a while. And Martina and I wanted to go there to take photos before the vultures got there and started stealing things. Let me hasten to interject here. We never take anything except photographs and films. That's it. Anything that's there stays there. But we wanted to get there before the looters got there and boogered it all up. Well, along come the Kung Flu virus, and we couldn't go. And now we can travel again, but apparently the family or somebody has taken over the place, and they won't let anybody in at all. But it doesn't really matter because the history has been disturbed.
Who got the pictures, Harry, when it was untouched or virtually untouched? We did a program on that whole place.
Yeah, we did.
Lots of pictures.
As you know, we got a ton of photos from the place that Martine took.
Uh-huh.
And, wow, history. Now Martine says we can go and show up and knock on the door and say, hey, here's Mr. Cooper, a researcher, historian from North America. He's traveled 7,000 miles. Can we please come in and talk? Maybe they'll say yes. Maybe they'll say hit the trail. But going 7,000 miles on the hope that somebody might say, yeah, come on in for coffee, kind of iffy.
Yeah. Well, that picture shows it. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
And the same is true with the descendants of the Eichhorn family, the people that owned the Eden Hotel, where they had sent tons of money to Hitler during his rise in politics. And he came there visiting several times after the war was over and after he escaped. Mm-hmm. You've seen the pictures I sent you of him having tea with the Eichhorn family in 1947. He looked pretty good for a guy who had been dead for 2 years, according to history.
Quite remarkable, yes.
Yeah. Modern medicine.
There is one and only one known recording. Now, all of you have seen the World War II films of the big rallies and with Hitler giving speeches and so forth. And what you don't know is that in many cases, most cases, a certain group of people got those and sped up the film to make his voice sound like an insane Mickey Mouse. He didn't sound like that at all. There's a recording of his voice at normal conversational tones that was made when he went to see the former, we'll call him president or whatever the title was, of Norway. And they actually had a recording going for some reason, and they let it go, and somebody got the recording and snuck it out. The SS missed it. And it's the only recording of his voice in its normal speaking tones that exists, that we know of. And I sent it to you. I don't know if you remember seeing it or not.
I remember it. I've got it in the on the hard drive.
Good, because it's quite surprising. His voice was an absolutely five-star speaking voice. He had a great speaking voice, very self-assured. The resonance in his voice. Let me see if I can find it. I'll play some of it here at some point. But it was a remarkable voice, and nobody knows this. All they know is Mad Mickey Mouse.
It's amazing what can be done to make somebody a hero or make somebody bad news.
Oh, it's an incredible smear job. Well, it goes on around the clock today.
Yeah.
Never stopped.
Yeah. I know. And the sad thing is the sheeple listen to it and they believe it because...
Well, it imprints in their mind immediately.
They couldn't put it on the air if it wasn't true, right?
No.
They couldn't put it in the National Enquirer if it wasn't true.
Absolutely. Oh, my.
So, incidentally, let me answer a question that a lot of people might be interested in. And one of our members, Jim Bauernschmidt, member number 7789, asked, how's the progress coming on the book about Martin Bormann that Lawrence DeMello is writing? Well, I talked to her on the phone yesterday. No, day before, sorry. And she has put that one on hold because she's involved in another project that I can't talk about, but it's taking all her spare time. And so the book she's in the process of doing on Martin Bormann is spiked for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I know you're going to have questions for me off the air.
No, I understand. It's just she's involved with so many things, and some things don't go as we'd like them to, and they create problems.
Unfortunately, yep.
Yeah.
Oh, incidentally, if the phone goes dead, it's not because I got mad and hung up. We're having a hell of a Florida thunderstorm right now.
All right. Let's go to our pictures. What do you say?
Roger that.
All right. Everyone, go to guests. Look at the top of the homepage and just click on guests. And right below Admiral Cooper's name is a link. Click on that, and you'll pull up the pictures. And we'll give everybody a moment or two to get caught up, and then we'll jump. These are all thumbnails, so when you click on each picture, they enlarge, which is fun. These pictures range from, I guess, 2008 to 2016.
Right.
Am I remembering correctly?
Yeah, pretty much. No, 2017.
All right. Okay, let's go to picture number one.
No, actually, really 2019. Nice... I'm sorry, I can't even read my own writing. Yep, picture number one.
All right. Beautiful, beautiful home. That's 2008. When Harry went there the first time on a small boat, power boat, and when you first saw that from the boat, and you got close enough to make it out and all that, what went through your mind? What did you think about?
Aside from the history of who lived there, I was thinking, damn, I wish I had bunches of millions of dollars. I'd like to buy this place.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely pristine. At that time, 2008, there were no roads back there either. Now they put through Highway 40 that goes all the way through into Chile, and it goes literally right along the property line with their farm. The house itself here is a good half mile through the jungle from the highway.
Look at those trees behind the house. And go back one half mile from there, and there's Highway 40. It's right there.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a German-designed, German-constructed home. Oh, the local artisans built it, but it was put together by the Mercedes family from architectural drawings, and it is a beautiful structure. Still quite savable now. It's looking pretty catty now, though,
as we'll see as we go through it. Because I've done some then and now type comparison, so we'll see that in the next one or two or three pictures.
All right. Picture number two gives you a little bit better view of it. Right in the center on the left, to the left of that shrub, is the great room, as it were. And right inside that window, which you'll see a little later, there was an oak breakfast table that spanned that middle piece of glass, and it's where I think they took most of their meals. There was a formal dining table in there as well, but right in that room is where they spent a lot of time. Over on the right, those three panes, you see the deer in the corner on the right there. Isn't that a deer, Harry?
I don't know. That was a long time ago.
No, it's a dog.
It might have been one of the stray dogs that was running around there.
It was a dog. It is a dog. All right. Anyhow, you're not looking at picture number two. That room on the right corner with a balcony above it, that's a big room. Any guesses what that room? It looks like they might have had board meetings in there. It's a big room.
I'm guessing it was either from board meetings or maybe it was with a few desks for some of his support people. I'm not sure.
Or both.
We have
a big room.
Excuse me. We have a new member. He's one of our SEIG agents. SEIG means Shark Hunters, Eagle Hunters Intelligence Group. So this person is SEIG agent Nemo, and pointed out that upstairs room over the great room was not, as I first thought, it was not the master bedroom. That was Hitler's office, where he could look out from that room straight out over the lake.
The right master above bedroom, the breakfast table, so to speak.
Yeah. And the master bedroom was behind it,
mm-hmm.
which we'll see in some of the other pictures, I
mm-hmm.
think.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what it looked like in 2008. You could have moved in. The electric was working. The furnace was working. There's no air conditioning down there. It's not really needed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's you could walk right in, and it was fully furnished. The people that was living there before left in 1955 when Perón got kicked out of power, but it just was allowed to go to hell. And then in 2011, I think it was, the Chilean volcano El Tronador erupted, and zillions of tons of volcanic ash drifted east, and there were like 2 inches of volcanic ash all over the buildings, all over this beautiful green lawn. It looks like hell nowadays, but, hey, I guess somebody should have paid somebody to come out and sweep it all out. There was a big industry there in that whole area of people hauling away the ash.
Mm-hmm.
But why this didn't get covered or taken care of, I don't know.
Well, the owners didn't care. Now, the original occupants of the home for 10 years, if you think about it, it may be that Adolf Hitler lived longer in that home than he did in any other home, including the Berghof. 10 years.
Could be.
I'm not sure he lived in the Berghof for 10 years. I don't think
the Berghof was pretty much his getaway place, because he didn't like Berlin. It was a big, noisy city, and he liked the mountains of Bavaria because he came from the mountain area. He was born and raised in northern Austria, and it's a magnificent country there. Rolling mountains and beautiful fresh air. So he liked the Obersalzberg, and so he went there. Most people don't know that there was a second Reichs Chancellery in Berchtesgaden, where he would have his office and things. We went through it a couple of years ago. It's no longer in existence. The building is still there, but it was, it had been maintained exactly the way it was when Hitler left. But recently, within the last few years, it was turned into upscale condominiums in there. And where the pathway was to, what the heck was it, into a bunker complex, they tore that up and made an underground parking garage there for the people who bought their condos there. And there goes history.
The house in 1945 was fully furnished. The furniture in there was made by local craftspeople. But remember, there were very few people around the entire area, and zero. It was just a no-man's land.
That's why it was, the town of Bariloche, which was the jumping-off spot to go up here, was only about 4 blocks long by about 2 blocks wide. Today it's a huge big place, 150,000 or so, because it's a great vacation place.
Well, that's what, 20 miles across the lake, isn't it, at least?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that?
Oh, yeah. So back then, it was, as I have said in my writings, that it was about as far away from anything as the dark side of the moon, which was a great place to put Hitler, because Bormann was the guy that hauled him out. According to Don Angel, Hitler was ready to die in the Führer bunker, but Bormann wanted to keep him alive as a figurehead for the rebuilding of the next Reich, the Fourth Reich. And they got down to South America, and they had so incredibly much money, which Bormann had taken control of it, and he realized that raising a million-man army to start fighting again was not viable, so he started forming multinational corporations. Some of them are still in existence today. Grundig was one of them. So they got Hitler down there, and then they figured, well, we don't need him anymore, so they tucked him off here and basically told him, enjoy life, and sorry you don't have cable, but find something else to do.
He left in 1955 because Perón was overthrown, and they had to move. So he, Bolivia, Uruguay, who knows?
Yeah, well, he died in Bolivia.
Right.
In February of 13th of February 1962, he died in Bolivia.
Picture number three.
Yeah, we're moving at a great rate here, aren't we?
Say what?
We're moving at a fantastic pace here, aren't we?
No, we're crawling.
We get very detail oriented. This is my group that I had down there in 2009. I'm the guy in wearing the blue in the middle. And on the far left end, it's Dr. Charles Ellis, who's a psychiatrist. And he is very right-wing. And he was one of the reasons that the Southern Poverty Law Center said they were going to call me a Nazi, because Charlie was on my board of advisors. I don't know if he's a Nazi or not. I don't really give a damn. He was a very intelligent man and helped with our decisions. But, oh, God forbid, you don't dance to the Spitlickers tune, so we're Nazis. But this was in 2000.
Is Charlie still with us?
Oh, yeah. I was just talking to him a couple days ago. He's a life member of Shark Hunters, just like you are. He's a great guy. And so anyhow, moving along here, sorry. Look how beautiful that lawn is. Okay, it's a little dry because it was summertime when we were there. But it didn't
It, yeah. 95. Imagine 50 years earlier. Everything was manicured perfectly. They had, you name it. And the lady of the house was obviously respected and held in very high regard by the people there, and it was a beautiful home. It was gorgeous. Not the only home. Remember, behind it, off to the left and up the back, there were 8 or 10 other buildings at least. at least, including an enormous horse barn. So,
and incidentally, on this photo, you look to the left, and there's that one part of the building that sticks up a little bit in the back.
Yep.
That's a separate apartment area all to its own. It doesn't have any doors into the main house. You had to go out down a stairway and then in another doorway. So that's where a lot of guests were staying, and if they had guests, or that's where his adjutant and some of the other people were staying.
Mm-hmm.
Very well designed.
Remember the story I found? I think I found it. Somebody sent it to me. No, I found it. And it was about a young Argentine officer, and he was summoned by Perón and given a briefcase and said, "You're going to deliver this to someone who's very important. You're going to be flown there. You're going to be taken to the house. I want this absolutely handed to this gentleman from your hand to his hand." And that was quite an interesting story. He went to this house. I think he was on a float plane, I think, maybe a boat. I don't remember, but he walked up and he was invited in, and after a few minutes, the man of the house came in and he described the whole meeting. It was a remarkable read.
Yeah, but everybody knows Hitler committed suicide 30th of April 1945 because history said so.
Unfortunately, wrong.
Okay. And if you question history, you get the spit lickers on your back.
You're a Nazi if you question history. Okay, that's picture number three. Before this, again, a couple of years before the volcano dumped on it, which was 2012, I think, something like that.
Something like that.
Okay. Picture number four.
You see the sign there says, "No pasar." In Spanish, that's the same thing as in German. It's Eingang verboten, which we all know means Harry's welcome here.
And where is this sign?
That's at the entrance to the driveway of Inalco.
All right, very good. That's good. I had not seen that picture before. Okay, number five. There's 2019. You compare that to 2000, to the first picture, 2008. You can toggle kind of back and forth and see the difference. The difference primarily is the volcanic ash and what it did to the, it's acid, and what it did to the roof tiles and obviously the outside of the building. That building could be blasted and, you know, with a few thousand gallons of Olympic stain, brought back to an immaculate condition. It's in fine shape.
All it takes is time and money. About $10 million would put that and the rest of the whole place back in good shape again. But incidentally, if you look to the left, almost to the edge of the picture, you see that forked stick standing up. That's where the No Pesar sign was.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Got it. All right.
Which means Harry's welcome here.
Yes. Very good. Who's building a fire in the fireplace?
That was the old caretaker. He slept. Excuse me. He slept on a mattress in the main room by the near the fireplace.
That would be the center three windows, everybody.
And right. That's correct.
And above those center three windows was Hitler's office, where he
upstairs,
worked.
Upstairs. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you look to the left of those three windows, that doorway, in 2008 when we first went, that's how I got in. I picked the lock and went in. Got a lot of interior foot shots, which we won't see them all tonight because it's
Harry welcome here. So
that's right. Harry's welcome here.
Okay.
But you can see the place, and you're going to see even more. You're going to be crying when you get to them, I guess. Photo number six. This is again in 2009. I just had to have a hero shot, as we call them, and show my hat, Strategic Air Command.
Very good. Nuclear weapons.
I paid 2.5 years of my life for that hat. I was in the Air Force 4 years, but 2.5 years with SAC.
Wow. All right. Well, the house is looking good. Now, remember that they had to literally bring in by boat all the furnishings All the building materials, everything for that house.
Yeah.
It was all brought in. There was nothing
around. Yeah, that's the only way to get there back to when it was built in 1945 was over the water by those steamboats. Small, I mean, we're not talking like the Mississippi Queen here. We're talking little 30, 40-foot long little freight boats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number eight. Is it seven? Seven. I'm one ahead. Number seven.
I thought that was the new math. This is around the back of the house and right in the forefront here with the stairs going up. That's that part that was off to the left of the
separate
picture.
Separate quarters. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, that is the separate quarters all by itself, and that stairway is the only way in and out. And then you
see
go
those,
around and...
See those old roses, Harry?
Yeah.
The old flower bed there? Those roses might be survivors from when 1955. They just
could
keep
have been.
Growing.
Could have been. This is one that was really beautiful and pristine. Like I say, you could have just walked in and hit the switches and everything would have come to life. But I didn't have $23 million. Plus, as I found out later, you have to be a natural-born Argentinian because this is on the border. Anything on a border there, you got to be a natural-born Argentinian. And I ain't.
Real quick, picture number eight, another view of the back
house.
You can see the roof there, the last segment of the roof. There's probably four-foot centers, and the edge hanging over the structure is sagging. You can see the sag in it.
Yeah, it's drooping a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Drooped a lot more after that.
Yeah. All right. Well, there are our first eight pictures. We have 300 to go. Stay right there. And we'll come
back. We'll be
back
to you about Wednesday.
Yeah. All right. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be right back with Harry.